I've entitled this sermon, The Pretense of Prayer. The Lord is speaking here about the subject of prayer, and in a few minutes we'll look at what He had to say. But I want to say this morning that I am the furthest thing from an expert on the subject of prayer. I don't feel as though I am at all what I'd like to be in the matter of prayer, but I nonetheless have probably read more books on the subject of prayer than perhaps any other subject that I can think of. And I suppose it's because I feel needy in that area, and I often like to be encouraged by reading good books on the subject of prayer, and I have many in my library. But it is a matter of deep importance to myself, and I hope to you as well. Prayer is one of the most basic, elementary things of a Christian life. It's like breathing. It's a natural thing for God's children to pray, to communicate with their Father. And yet, again, I find that a lot of Christians think it is an unusual thing if they hear about somebody who has a continual and definite answers to prayer and on a regular basis. They find that to be unusual. And it should not be that way at all amongst God's people, because we have great promises of God answering our prayer. And again, prayer is not a complicated thing. But I find that a lot of Christians feel as though they are spinning their wheels and getting nowhere in the matter of prayers. And we want to consider what the Lord can teach us here in these verses. Now, Jesus in this sermon, just to kind of bring our minds back into it just for a second, He has been all the way through this sermon as we've studied it. He has been unmasking the hypocrites, the religious, the superficial religiousness of the Jews of that day, and primarily, of course, aiming at the teachers who were the Pharisees, because they were the ones that were propagating this sort of religion that was all external. It was all on the outside. It was something they could put on at any moment when it was necessary. When they come to church, you know, you put on your religious garb and you say religious things, you act religious, and then when you go out into the world, you take it off and you blend in with the world. And the Lord was trying to help them to see that kind of quote-unquote righteousness of the Pharisees didn't cut it with God. Because the righteousness that Christ imputes to us when we are saved is not something we put on the outside. It is something that is in our heart. It's a change of nature. It's a change of heart. And salvation not only changes your eternal destiny, it changes your heart. And that's what the Lord is aiming at in this sermon. And so he exposes their hypocrisy in a lot of different ways. And what we've found in chapter 6 so far is that he even says that their... In chapter 5, he was kind of talking about their morality was inadequate. It was just put on. But now he talks about their religious service and their religious activities. Even that in itself was false and had fallen short. And now he comes to their prayer life, and he says, your prayers are vain, your prayers are empty, your prayers are pointless. And we're going to discover as to why that is in a moment. But as I was thinking about this sermon, and I couldn't help but tie it into something I was reading earlier in the week in my daily reading. And it's back in Isaiah chapter 58. Let me have you turn there, if you would, just for a moment. Just let us think a little more deeply on this. In Isaiah chapter 58, I was reading during the week in Isaiah, and I hit this chapter, and it was very interesting because I was thinking in my own heart in preparing for praying for the revival meeting. And I was, as you will read in your bulletin, that little piece there I wrote, and I hope you will read that, I encourage you to begin to pray, but not only to pray, but even to consider fasting and praying for the revival meeting. And when I hit this chapter, we're not going to deal with it this morning, but he talks about fasting and praying in this chapter. And it's quite interesting. But I want to just draw your attention to the opening verses of the chapter where he says, "Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins." And of course, he's speaking here to Isaiah the prophet, and he tells them to expose them, to show them their transgressions. And then notice, though, it's interesting what he says now in verse 2, "Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God." Now that all sounds very good, doesn't it? He says, yet, and I almost want to insert the word though, or even though they seek me daily and they delight in knowing my ways as a nation, and they ask of me and they delight in approaching me. But notice in verse 3, he says, "Wherefore have we fasted, say they." Now this is Israel speaking. "And thou seest not. Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast, ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day to make your voice to be heard on high." Basically, what he's saying there is, even though they come to me, they seem to delight in knowing, you know, seeking after me, and they fast and they do all these things, yet they say, "God, why are we doing all this? And you don't seem to hear. You don't seem to answer." And he says, because all of that religious activity that you're doing doesn't make up for the fact that you are still behaving wickedly. It's like Jesus said, "You say, Lord, Lord, but your heart is far from me." That's what the point of what he's getting at here is. And so when we take that and we go back to Matthew chapter 6, we're going to discover that lots of times people pray, and they pray, it's not a matter of, he didn't say, if you pray, he says, when you pray, don't pray with this hypocritical heart that we're going to describe. Because it's possible for even believers, Christians, to be in the habit of praying, and yet our prayers are not really going any higher than the ceiling. And what is it that hinders prayer? That should be very important to us, right? I mean, what's the point of praying if God isn't interested in answering our prayers? And so we want to find out why. Well, I think know some hindrances to prayer that would come to mind if you know a little bit about the subject in the Bible. You remember where God said, "If I regard iniquity in my heart, God would not hear me." In other words, when I harbor sin, when I have unconfessed, unrepented sin in my life, and I know it, and I'm stubborn about it, or unwilling to get rid of it in my life, even though I might say I will, but I don't really, then that's a short circuit in our prayer life. In James says, "You have not because you ask not, and yet you ask and receive not because you ask amiss." So sometimes we ask amiss. How do we do that? He says, "You ask so that you can consume it upon your lust." You look at God as just some kind of genie or Santa Claus to just give you everything you want. And that's not the purpose of prayer either. Another hindrance we can think about in prayer, just thinking through what I know about hindrances of prayer in the Bible. In Peter, he tells husbands to dwell with their wives according to wisdom or knowledge, and when there's a division in our relationship with our spouse, he says, your prayers are hindered. And so there's some reasons we can understand why our prayers might be hindered. And we need to understand them and take a look at them and, you know, consider whether that's a problem in our life. But I think the Lord will give us a few others in this chapter. So now we're back at our text, Matthew chapter 5. And I only have 2 points today. You can be glad about that. The first one is vain praying. And the second one is victorious praying. That's what we want to consider today. The Lord's going to give us some instructions about vain praying. And I broke this down into two categories of vain praying. Number one is the category, or letter A, whatever you want to put on your outline there. Arrogant praying. I'm going to use that word, arrogant. Prideful. Self-centered, self-exalting prayer. And this is what he deals with in verse number 5. It was a very big problem in the life of the Pharisees. And many of the Jews had fallen into this kind of praying. He says, and when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets. And what is it? He says, that they may be seen of men. And verily I say unto you, they have their reward. And so this is that vain, and it's vain because it's self-centered, it's self-exalting, it's self-congratulating prayer. Prayer for that purpose. Now, some would say, he says that they love to pray standing in the streets. And some commentators want to say, well, there's the problem right there. They're standing in prayer rather than kneeling or prostrating themselves on the ground or something. And really, that's not the issue. There's nothing wrong with the position of standing to pray. The patriarchs and the prophets in the Bible stood and prayed. Sometimes I'll maybe in church say, Brother so-and-so, will you stand and lead us in prayer? And so standing's not the issue. It's not the position of their body that's the issue. Another thing that some would point out as a problem was that it was in public. They loved to stand in the synagogues and in the streets. But again, that's not really the issue. There's nothing wrong with praying in public. I hope that when you're at the restaurant, you do bow your head in prayer. When you're in school or in other public places, there's nothing wrong with praying in public or in the synagogue, which was, you know, we could liken that to the church. And so it's not wrong to pray in the public, but then he goes on to say, or even whether it was audible or not, that wasn't the issue, in the corners of the street. Now I think you get a hint a little bit there. The corners, the intersections, were the busy places. And what the issue really is not the position or the location of the body, but it's the position and location of the heart. And you understand it, right? When he says their purpose, their whole reason, what's behind their motive for their praying is to be seen of men. Now, I know you would think to yourself, well, okay, the Pharisees like doing that. I'm afraid to death to pray in front of people. I don't want to pray in people's... You know, I was one time... some of you have been here a long time. You've heard me tell all my stories. But anyway, I remember when I was a young Christian and I was in a Bible study group, and this was in overseas in the military. And I used to sweat about it at the beginning because they'd always call on somebody to pray. And I'd think, oh, don't call on me. I don't want to pray out loud. You know, I honestly would sweat and get nervous. And I used to, and then one day I thought about it. The Lord convicted my heart because I thought, why are you afraid? What is behind that fear? And I had to admit that I was afraid of what people would think of my ability to pray. It was really what was driving the fear in me. And then I had to say, Lord, I shouldn't worry about what other people hear anyway. I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. But so we, you know, and what we do sometimes, I think pride comes in the matter of prayer. And in public prayers, it's a danger. Can I confess? I'll be really candid with you this morning. I have prayed at times. I have prayed and got done praying or in the midst of a prayer. The thought went through my mind that, hey, that was a good prayer. Can you believe that? It does. It goes through your mind. And the interesting thing as I thought about this is that you would think that your time with God, that the devil wouldn't enter in and tempt you there. But believe me, he has no problem coming right into the prayer closet and getting at you right there. The devil has no problem tempting you when you're before the throne of heaven in prayer. And the temptation to maybe to be proud about it or to somehow take some credit or whatever it is, but we do that at times. Did you know that when it seems what we know in the Bible that Jesus faced his greatest attacks of temptation was when he was in the wilderness, right? Fasting and praying and communing with his Father. Isn't that interesting? It was at that point that Satan comes and really tempts him sorely. In the Garden of Gethsemane, I think that Satan was there certainly tempting the Lord. And at that point when he was struggling and wrestling and sweating drops of blood and communing with his Father. And so yes, even in those matters of sacred things, of even prayer, temptations can come into our hearts. But you notice what he says here. He says, they do this to be seen of men. And he says they have their reward. Now what's the reward of prayer? Well, it would be receiving the answer of what you prayed for. Wouldn't that be the reward? And did you know they got what they prayed for? Not necessarily what they asked God for, because that wasn't really what they were praying for. What they were praying for was so that men would, you know, applaud them or think of well of them. And they received it. And so they got that answer, but from God they got nothing. So that tells me something about prayer. It tells me about my own heart in the matter of prayer. And so arrogant prayer is one of them. The next one we find is a vain way of praying is aimless prayer. Look at verse 7. He says, but when ye pray, use not vain repetition as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. I call this aimless prayer because there can be some confusion here. It doesn't need to be about this issue. It's not condemning or forbidding repeating some request more than once or something like that before God. There's nothing. The issue is not repeated request. That's not really the problem. Paul, we know, prayed three times in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, right? When he had his thorn in the flesh. He prayed three times that God would remove it. And finally, the Lord said, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. And you can handle this thorn because I'll help you. We find Jesus went back again, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he prayed three times. He came and woke his disciples up and went back. And a matter of fact, in Matthew chapter 26, it says, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. So it's not a matter of repeating requests more than one time. In Luke chapter 18, the Lord told that parable of the widow who went to the unjust judge and couldn't get any justice from him until she kept coming and kept coming and finally wore him down. And so he said, I got to do something. This woman's going to drive me crazy. And the Lord, though, he was teaching that parable, he said in the beginning, it says this, it says that men ought always to pray and not to faint. And he's teaching us to be persistent or, to go always to the Lord in prayer. So what does he mean when he says to use not vain repetition? Well, the optimum word there is vain. It's vain repetition. And actually, the Greek word, that phrase, it has the idea of babbling or stammering. Which kind of, it's like if a boy wants to impress a certain girl and he talks and very soon he runs out of things to say and he just keeps right on babbling on, you know, just sort of says a bunch of nonsense, things that really don't mean anything. He just talking to talk and it's just a bunch of prattle. That's the idea of that. And so sometimes in prayer we do that. We just start praying in little cliches and we just babble on, babble on, babble on. We don't get down to really anything important. We're just talking a lot for the sake of talking a lot or something. And if arrogant prayer is the danger of public praying, and perhaps aimless prayer is the danger of closet praying or private prayer. Our prayer, you know, it's not like, sometimes I find that, and I've even caught myself thinking, you know, I don't have to inform God about all this. He already knows about it. Sometimes we act like, you know, we have to inform him as though he was ignorant on the issue. We have to go through it all with him. That's not really necessary. I'm saying in prayer we can pour out our heart to God and he doesn't mind if we pray for hours or for long periods of time. That's again not the issue. But if we're just babbling for no purpose, then it's aimless and pointless. And so this is what the Lord says. He says, don't be like the hypocrites. They babble on, babble on, babble on for no reason. And they think that they'll be heard for their much speaking. So, those are the vain ways the Lord is talking about praying. And I just want to encourage you to think about your prayer life. We don't want to be vain in our prayers. How do we be victorious? Well, let's look at that. We'll close in just a moment. In verse number 6, he says, "But when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret." And here's that wonderful promise, "Thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." It's never good to be a closet Christian except in the matter of prayer. And there we should spend much time in our closets of prayer. That doesn't mean to go in your coat closet, you know, and hide in there or something necessarily. But it's just talking about a secluded place, a quiet place, a private place where you can go before the Lord. And that's where, and again, there's nothing wrong with praying in public, but most of our prayer life should be between me and God alone. And you know, there's some things about the private closet prayer life, if you will, that I think teaches us something. Number one, I wrote down three things. Just this, closet prayer equals exclusive or personal, intimate prayer. And that's what prayer, you know, it's not a matter of saying the right words or some formula or anything like that. When you pray, your Father just likes to spend time communing with you. Did you know that? And it's a matter of coming to the Lord. And when we can go into the closet or into that private place, we're relieved of the need to impress anybody because there's nobody there to impress to begin with. And we can then, and we're also relieved of our reluctance, perhaps, to really open up to God, to really pour out our heart. And that's why it's in those times when we can commune the most freely and the most sincerely with God. And I hope you learn to do that. I hope that's an experience that you're well, you know, familiar with, is to go before the Lord and to be able to pour out your heart. Confess everything. I don't know how many times I've been confessing and I just say, "Lord, you know everything about me. You know the details of every motive, every thought. And I might as well just come clean and tell you confess it all. No point hiding it, because he already knows it anyway. No point pretending, because you're not fooling him. And so that's when you can really just empty your heart out and just confess it all and get it all right and allow the Lord to minister to you. That's a blessing of the prayer closet. Not only is it exclusive and intimate personal prayer, but it's edifying prayer. You know, it's not a bad practice to share prayer requests and pray about others' needs and things like that. Intercessory prayer is a wonderful thing. But there are some times, I think, where to me it's important to just pray about a matter and never tell anybody else that you're praying about it. To just pray about it and then because when God answers that prayer and you know that you and God are the only ones that ever knew about it, it had to be the Lord that did that. You know what I mean? I mean, if you had, let's just use this illustration. If you had a need for a certain amount of money and you prayed for it and then you told other people, asked them to pray for it, and one of them gave you that money, now you'd say, "Praise the Lord, he answered my prayer." And certainly we should praise him for that. And God answers prayer like that. But what if you went and asked God and didn't tell anybody that you had that need? And then it came in. Now, it's not necessarily any more of an answered prayer. I'm not trying to say that, but I'm just saying that then you don't have that in the back of your mind. Well, maybe they were just being generous or whatever. You really see that God did that. And it builds your faith. When you get answers to, you know, you can pray for $5 and you get it, and the next time you might have the faith to pray for $50 or, you know, and that's maybe a bad illustration, but I'm just saying you can understand when we see that God does hear and God does care. Now, I know I haven't told this story for 10, 12, 13 years, so you won't remember it. But I went to college to a little school that was started by a man named Ford Porter. Dr. Ford Porter wrote that track that's over there with the world on it called God's Simple Plan of Salvation. I remember hearing, now Dr. Porter was already with the Lord when I arrived at college, but he was the founder of the college, and we heard all of his stories from those that were there in the day, right? And I remember, and I think I actually heard him on a tape one time tell this story, where this is back when they used to have people come around and they would sharpen scissors and stuff like that. And his mother said to him, she said, "I haven't seen the guy that sharpens the shears in so long, and I need to get these sharpened." And at that time, Brother Porter was a young man, just a teenager. And he prayed and he said, "Lord, could you please send that man around sharpen the scissors today?" And he went off to school and he came back, and when he got home, his mom said, "You'll never believe what happened." He said, "The man sharpened scissors showed up, didn't he?" And she said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And he said, "Well, I asked the Lord to send him around." Now that seems like a, you know, funny little illustration, but that started him on a journey where he saw that answer to prayer, and he began to pray and pray and pray and pray. And God used him in a wonderful way. And he prayed this prayer. He said, "Lord, please give me a ministry that would last beyond my life and that would encircle the globe." And God gave him wrote that track, God's Simple Plan of Salvation. It's been translated into hundreds of languages around the world. He started a Bible college where there's preachers have come out of there and have gone around the world preaching the gospel. And so I'm just saying that when you go and you learn to pray and you ask God and you see God do things that you know he did in the answer of your prayer, it builds your faith. It strengthens you to continually walk with God and pray, and you want to see more of that. And so closet prayer is edifying, and closet prayer is earnest. It's sincere. I already said that the need to impress men is gone, and it's there we can really come to humble and sincere prayer. Now, not all prayer needs to be in private, but what we learn in private praying needs to be applied to all prayer. So in other words, when I stand up and pray, if there's others around listening or in the prayer meetings on Thursday or whatever, you know, I can be in my closet right here because I can go before God and I can forget that you're there and I can just commune with my Father. And that's what prayer needs to be. It just needs to be communing with your Father. So, we don't want to have the pretense of prayer, but we want to have the real deal, as they say. What is real prayer? Well, I hope that's been a help for you to think about it this morning. I'm going to ask you to stand, if you would.